further inquiries by Vidura. Further inquiries by Vidura. So text 17 is as follows. Yascha moodha tamo loke. Yascha buddhe parangataha. Tavubhav sukhame dete. Klishyatantarito janaha. Yascha moodha tamo loke. Yaha. One who is. Cha. Also. Moodhatamah. The lowest of the fools. Loke. In the world. Yah cha. And one who is. Buddhe. Of intelligence. Param. Transcendental. Gataha. Gone. Tau. Of them. Ubhau. Both. Sukham. Happiness. Edhete. Enjoy. Klishyati. Suffer. Antaritaha. Situated between. Janaha. Persons. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Both the lowest of fools. And he who is transcendental to all intelligence. Both of them. Both the lowest of fools and he who is transcendental to all intelligence. Both enjoy happiness. Whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. Both the lowest of fools and he who is transcendental to all intelligence enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. Purport. The lowest of fools do not understand material miseries. They pass their lives merrily and do not inquire into the miseries of life. Such persons are almost on the level of the animals, who, although in the eyes of superiors are always miserable in life, are unaware of material distresses. A hog's life is degraded in its standard of happiness, which entails living in a filthy place, engaging in sex enjoyment at every opportune moment, and laboring hard in a struggle for existence. But this is unknown to the hog. Similarly, human beings who are unaware of the miseries of material existence and are happy in sex life and hard labor are the lowest of fools. Yet, because they have no sense of miseries, they supposedly enjoy so-called happiness. The other class of men who are liberated and are situated in the transcendental position above intelligence, material intelligence, are really happy and are called Paramahamsas. But persons who are neither like the hogs and dogs nor on the level of the Paramahamsas feel the material pangs. And for them, inquiry about the supreme truth is necessary. The Vedanta Sutra states, Athato Brahma Jignyasa. Now one should inquire about Brahman. This inquiry is necessary for those who are between the Paramahamsas and the fools who have forgotten the question of self-realization in the midst of life in sense gratification. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripatam Maham Vande. ವಂದೇ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು ದಿನತಾರಿಣಂ ವಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯೇವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ್ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ನಾರಾಯಣ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ಸತೋ ಜಯಮುಧೀರಯೇತ್ ನಷ್ಟಪ್ರಾಯೇಷು ಅಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯಾ ಭಗವತೀ ಉತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತೀರ್ನೈಷ್ಟಿಕೀ Both the lowest of fools on one end and he who is transcendental to all intelligence, both these people enjoy happiness. Whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. Any idea of who these people are who are between them? All of us. Unless some of us are Paramahamsas in this room. Of course, nobody is a fool. Otherwise, we will not be sitting in the temple in the morning. So, it talks about people at both ends of the spectrum. Before we get into this subject, a quick context leading up to this verse. This is verse number 17. In the chapter called as Further Inquiries by Vidura. So a conversation is happening between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. Srimad Bhagavatam at the end of the day is nothing but a set of conversations between different personalities. So in this conversation between Maitreya Muni and Vidura, Vidura is asking two questions to Maitreya Muni. He has asked it in this section. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unchangeable, then how is he connected with the three modes of material nature? Because when we know that when Pradhan, the primeval cosmic substance which comes from Brahman, comes in contact with the three modes of material nature, comes in contact with the material energy of the Lord, then it produces all these effects. The quality of Pradhan changes from Nirguna to Saguna. So we know that. Now, the paradigm here is that Lord Krishna also undergoes through the same effect as his material energy. So from that mindset, he is asking this question. That Lord Krishna, who is also Supreme Brahman, is coming in contact with the three modes of material nature. So does he also come under the influence of the material energy? So he is asking this question. Further he asks, first he asks about Bhagavan, then he asks about Jiva. He asks, how does the pure soul get engaged in nescience? And why do the activities of the pure soul lead to misfortune and misery? These are two questions which he is asking. Maitreya Muni answers these two questions by saying that the theory that the Lord is overcome by the three modes of material nature is bogus. Nonsense. So he answers that. He says it is against logic. Because if the Lord is subordinated by the three modes of material nature, then how can he be the Lord? Also, talking about the jivas, the jiva who thinks that he is God is like a man who is dreaming that his head has been cut off. So a man, just imagine this scene. A man is dreaming, in his dream he is seeing that his head has been cut off. It is not logical, right? Because if your head has been cut off, how can you see that your head has been cut off? Like that. So it is as illogical as this argument. Thinking that man himself is, jiva is God. But the jiva, in contact with the three modes of material nature, has forgotten that he is God. Which means, again the same logic comes, that illogic rather comes, that God can be subjugated by the three modes of material nature. Also an example is given, this is akin to seeing the moon trembling in water. Actually the moon is not trembling, but because the water is having that effect, the reflection of the moon on the water, then it seems that the moon is trembling. Similarly, the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. So he is answering. Maitreya Muni is answering Vidura. And then Maitreya Muni is concluding that part of the section by saying that such illusions are dispelled by the process of bhakti. Because bhakti process gives you sambandha jnan, abhideya jnan and prayojana jnan. And he says that simply by hearing and chanting, one can overcome the miseries which are inflicted by material life. Having heard this, Vidura tells Maitreya Muni that, thank you very much, my doubts are now resolved by such explanations. And that the disturbances to conditioned souls, I now understand, have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. Because the external energy at the end of the day is created and is active simply for giving this illusory experience to the jivas that they are the lords of material nature. So that's why he's concluding with that statement. And now this verse comes up where Vidura is again further continuing to Maitreya Muni as he's thanking him. He's saying, both the lowest of fools and he who is transcendental to all intelligence enjoy happiness, whereas persons between them suffer the material pangs. So let us understand why both these two people are happy, whereas people who are in between are suffering. There are several dimensions, aspects to this topic. It is in fact very difficult to speak this within 1 hour that we have, but we will try our best. So we'll start from the lower spectrum. On the lower spectrum is the fool. And Prabhupada gives the example of a hog. If you give gulab jamun to a hog, and if you give human excreta in a plate, what will the hog eat? The hog is 100% convinced that whatever it is tasting is a higher taste. Whereas Prabhupada writes here, people who are of superior consciousness than that will understand that that is not a higher taste. But the hog is convinced. Don't disturb me now. I am having my breakfast. Don't bring all these abominable substances like gulab jamun to spoil my mood. And almost like that. You know? The hog is convinced in its consciousness. So, this is the lower end of the spectrum. The fools who relish material happiness. Why do they do that? Because they are fools. A nice example I heard in a recent class. It talks about a drunkard. For example, if a person is absolutely sozzled, doesn't know what is happening to him, fully gone after the Friday night drinks, okay, and then he's somehow trying to come home walking, he's tripping somewhere, he's falling into the gutter. Now he's also, you know, completely stinking, right? He's got multiple injury wounds, but he's blissful. Ha 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 ha. He's walking like that. Okay, he's very happy. Correct? And someone comes him and gives yells at him using abusive language. You drunkard and X, Y, Z, all kinds of bad words. This person is giving to the drunkard. But the drunkard is very blissful. Ah. Oh, people are cursing me. Very good, very nice. He is completely unaffected by whatever people are telling him. In the morning, let's say he comes back to his senses and then he's told, you know, yesterday you were drunk, but that fellow, you know, he abused you with bad words. How dare he abuse me with such words? I'm a decent human being. How dare he could tell me all this? Why is he feeling offended now? Why is he suffering? Because he's come back to his senses. So fools, because they are completely sozzled, so they cannot experience even the miseries of this world. If a drunkard, for example, sees a murder taking place, he'll just go ahead and then, and then he'll again collapse and he'll say, okay, one more bottle, like that. So he cannot even understand that there is a murder which is happening. There is a misery that is taking place. So on the lower end of the spectrum, here is the man who has no worries, no worries, mate. On the other end is the transcendentalist. The drunkard being fully in the bodily concept of life, in fact having forgotten that also in a different way. The drunkard also has forgotten that he is not the body, or he is the body. God knows what he has forgotten, but he doesn't care. So on one hand he is there, who is insensitive. On the other hand is a transcendentalist who is genuinely beyond the bodily concept of life, and therefore that person is also very happy. Sober. One is sober in the situation because of one's ignorance, and one is sober in the same situation because of transcendental realization. One is above all these things. For example, there was one, when I was a child, there was one person in my colony. We used to call him Dharmarajan Mama. So he used to, of course he went through a very bad time. His son, young son, he was returning from school, car hit him and the son died. It was probably second standard or something like that. Since then he lost his orientation in life and there was no Krishna consciousness to give him. So what do people do? Take to alcohol. So it was the first time that he started drinking. By birth he was a Brahmana. He used to do all the Vedic samskaras at home. But when we saw this happen in his life, he didn't know how to respond. And he started taking alcohol. And every day he'll come drunk. And we used to see him going like this and falling in the gutter. Very respectable family. But just imagine such person falling in the gutter and coming. So this person, though he was, and he had multiple injuries on his body. Every day he used to go to work. After that he used to drink to forget. Because he's coming home. He cannot bear that, I can't see my son now. So he'll get all these multiple wounds. But then once he used to come out of his inebriated state, he used to speak Purusha Suktam, very fluently. He could recite the Vedas very fluently. In fact, some of very good advice that I got in my life early on was from him. Right? So this is the state of a jiva. Sometimes he can vacillate between this end and that end. So that is one example. The second is example of the fools is the fools have the ostrich mentality. So the ostrich, when it is faced with danger, it closes its eyes as if the danger doesn't exist anymore. So people close their eyes. Alcohol is a way of closing your eyes to the dangers of life, right? In fact, one Hindi song I remember, So this song was, of yesteryear's 1970s. It says, "Na poocho koi hame zeher kyun pee liya? Zeher ye pee liya to thoda sa jee liya." Which means, don't ask me why I took alcohol. Why I took this poisonous substance. Because little bit I took this poison, so little bit I lived. That's what is the meaning of this. So because they want to forget the distresses of life, so they take this poison. Whereas Paramahamsas, on the other hand, know the illusory nature of these miseries. Not only that, all these miseries are taking place around them, but they are tasting the transcendental bliss of Krishna consciousness, which which is called as Sandrananda Visheshatma, which we were currently discussing in our Bhakti Shastri course. So they are on the other hand, they are here. So they are easily able to deal with all these things. That is point number two. Third point is, once I heard again in another class, fools live as though they will never die. Or the other set of fools, who are a little bit more advanced fools, you know, they take a short-term view of life. They have another idea. They said, okay, I'm not saying I won't die, but death is inevitable. So why worry about it? So enjoy, mate. They take another view. Whereas Paramahamsas also use the same logic. He says, yes, death is inevitable, so why worry about it too much? Yes, but rebirth is not inevitable. Which again will lead to this death. This death will not happen once. It will happen as many times as you take birth. So that is their view. And they say that yes, death is also the end of material existence if you want it to be. If you choose as so, there is a way out. So therefore they are happy. They are also not worried about death. So these are two spectrums. Fourth aspect is that fools enjoy material happiness in the material world without fear of reaction. They think, anyway, who is there to question me? So let me enjoy. Do whatever you want. Live life king size. Right? So they don't have any fear of any reactions. Whereas Paramahamsas taste spiritual bliss by virtue of their uninterrupted service to the Lord while still remaining in the material world. And they are without any fear. They are completely dependent on the Lord, and they have complete faith. Rakshishidhiya Savisvaso Goptritve Varanam Tatha. Two aspects of surrender. That the Lord will definitely protect me and the Lord will definitely maintain me. So why worry? So the fools do not fear material reaction, and the transcendentalists also do not fear material reaction in their own ways. Okay. Now, there is a layer in between the fool who is shameless and between the transcendentalists who are self-realized. There is a shameful, embarrassed layer comprising most of us. Prabhupada always often uses the word embarrassed by the material energy, like that, by the pangs of the material energy. The jiva is embarrassed. So we are in between. But it's not only the devotees. There are so many people who are in between, the fools as well as the transcendentalists. For example, there are three categories. One is the pure moralist. He may not be a devotee, but he's a pure moralist. So he's not a shameless character. Right? Oh no, we should not drink, we should be responsible. You know, even if we drink, then it should be below the acceptable limits. How can you do this? How can you drink and drive above the alcohol limits? Be a moralist. Drink responsibly. Have Friday night sex, but use contraceptives. You know, don't be irresponsible. This is the moralist. So these people are there. And then there are the pious people, you know, the demigod worshippers. And then there are the practicing spiritualists. I'm using the word practicing spiritualists. Why? Because the practiced spiritualists, the perfected spiritualists, are on that end of the spectrum. So these are the practicing spiritualists. So the moralist, the pious, and the practicing spiritualists. All these are in the middle segment. Now the moralists could also be atheists or agnostics. Atheist means a person who 100% says there is no God. He is completely convinced. And agnostic is, I don't care, or I'm not sure. So, now these people still are responsible in one sense. They are not equal to the fools. Why? Because they still have some social responsibility. It's not that atheists don't have social responsibility. Okay, they may not spit on the road. They may do the right things. They may obey the traffic signals, right? So they have some level of social responsibility. However, in terms of their inquiry into the higher truths of life, they are irresponsible. Why do we have to inquire into the higher truths of life? Because we want to put an permanent end to the pangs of material miseries. So though they are socially responsible, they are not inquiring into the higher truths. Therefore, they will also suffer the pangs of material miseries at the end of the day. So in that sense, they are no different than the drunkards in terms of the outcome that they will suffer. The drunkard is a person who is genuinely asleep because he is genuinely drunk and sozzled. So he cannot hear any good instruction anyway. So he is genuinely asleep. In one sense, the drunkard is afraid of waking up. You remember that song? He is afraid of waking up because when you wake up, then you will come face to face with the miseries of life. So he genuinely puts himself to sleep by intoxication. Whereas the atheists and the agnostics, they are not genuinely asleep. They don't want to wake up because of their false ego. Don't wake me up. Don't tell me about all these things. I'm afraid that I may become like you. That's a false ego. They are too afflicted by material intelligence. This character, this type, this segment of people. Too afflicted by material intelligence. And because they are materially awake, but spiritually not awake, asleep, they will suffer the pangs of material miseries. Right. But they are still not shameless to the extent that the other categories. Little bit more refined. White-collared shamelessness. These people try to overcome material miseries by self-help. I don't care. I think I'll sort it out. I know how to sort out these kind of issues in my life. There's science, there's technology, there's logic. There are counselors, there are psychiatrists. I know how to sort it out. Material science is advancing. So these people try to overcome material miseries by self-help using material intelligence. So they perpetually suffer. So they are in that middle category in one sense. Not as foolish, you know, awake, materially awake, but still they will suffer. Then there are the pious people. These people are the believers. I believe that there is a supreme authority. There is something higher. It could be Krishna, it could be Ram, it could be Ganesh, it could be Shiva, it could be Murugan, it could be anybody. It could be the hill there, it could be my village god and goddess. I don't know, but somebody is there. Kali, maybe Durga, I don't know. You know. Somebody is there. These people are a bit more intelligent than the atheists and the agnostics because they at least believe in some superior power. But the problem is they also suffer material pangs. Why? Because they go to these demigods and seek only temporary relief from them. So they may do some karma kanda, some philanthropic activity, so that they can get heavenly planets. It's like a person who is living in Jhopadpatti. You know what is Jhopadpatti? Means hutments. Who is living in the slum areas or in the, what do you call that in English? Shacks. Downtown, the really horrible place. What do you call that? Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj lecture, you know. Ghettos. Person who is living in the ghettos, he is certainly given a bungalow in Turak. You know, or bungalow in that, what is that? Beach road facing the, you know. He says, you can go there, you know. Come out of the ghetto. Come on. Bed is there for you, you know. TV is there. Wine is there. Enjoy for, you know, 1 year, 2 years you can enjoy. You know, you can everyday view the beach. And then after 2 years, you have to go back to the ghetto. But no. These are the so-called pious people. They will do some pious activities, enjoy, but they will also suffer the pangs of material misery. They are a little bit less fools than the atheists and agnostics, who are socially responsible. So in that sense, they are a little bit less fools than the drunkards, who are irresponsible, completely in tamagun, like that. The view of these pious people is that happiness is nothing but a temporary cessation of material miseries. So they don't have an absolute concept of a permanent concept of happiness. And they feel that through occasional divine intervention, let me alleviate these sufferings somehow. At least for a few days, I'm living on beach road. So which is good. Like the old lady who was carrying these heavy sticks on her head and she was struggling, and when God came in front of her, asked her, can you ask me for any boon? She says that, oh, no. And the sticks fell down because she couldn't carry. She's saying that, can you pick it up and put it on my head, please, my dear Lord? You know, I'm unable to carry these sticks. You know? So just either wanting to work too hard to enjoy the temporary benefits that material life offers, and when material life fails to offer that, go and seek divine intervention so that you can continue, you know, enjoying material life with the occasional slaps. So, descending order of foolishness or ascending order of intelligence, going right up to the transcendentalist. So, we are on that journey right now. So, we saw drunkards, we saw moralists who could be atheists, agnostics, we saw pious people who are believers but want temporary happiness. Then we come to those people who are called as Shunyavadis. They have another concept of beating misery. They say this whole world is miserable anyway. But you know what? You can commit suicide and get rid of all material miseries. Because not only you are not the body, but even the soul is not eternal. They are called as Shunyavadis. At the end of the day, the body is anyway illusory, but soul is also illusory. Zero, everything is zero. Shunyavadis. So they say, by committing spiritual suicide, so therefore don't act in this material world. Just goes to some Himalaya somewhere, just sit. Don't interact with anything. Don't do any sin. Just don't do anything. Because everything is zero at the end of the day. So this is called a Shunyavadi philosophy. So they think that by committing such suicide, which suicide means what? Suicide of the soul. They think they can. Actually the soul, what is it? Na jayate na mriyate. The soul, and then in the second chapter, Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, the soul cannot be cut. The soul cannot be, you know, burnt by fire. But these people don't believe in that. They think that no, there is no existence. Yes. It could be anybody. Prabhupada calls them Shunyavadis. No? Some religion may adopt Shunyavadism in their philosophy. Okay. We are not condemning any religion, but we are talking about the fact that some people think like that. Yeah, and it is what they believe in. So everyone has a right to believe whatever they want to. Okay, but they believe in that. But the Vedas declare that the soul is eternal, and that is the absolute truth. So by we thinking that the soul is not eternal, the soul doesn't stop becoming eternal, because the absolute truth will still continue to exist, whether I believe it or whether I don't believe it. And because of that, Shunyavadis also suffer the pangs of material misery, because the soul is eternal, unfortunately. You can't commit spiritual suicide. You have to come back. Okay. So again, little bit higher. But they at least have some higher inquiry. At least they know the temporal nature of material happiness. So they are a little bit more advanced than these people who are just trying to enjoy the material world. So ascending order of intelligence in one sense, or descending order of foolishness. Finally, we come to the realm of the transcendentalists. In the realm of transcendentalists also there are several grades. Starting with the people who start their quest of being transcendentalists. Am I making sense? The transcendentalist section starts with people who have started practicing to be a transcendentalist but who have fallen down. Who are these people? They are the siddhas, the mystic yogis. They start off with a genuine quest for Paramatma realization, and therefore they perform dhyana yoga. But as they perform these yogic methods, they get Ashta Siddhis. they get the ability to manipulate the material energy, and when they start doing that, people start calling them as God or Bhagawan. They are able to bring a watch from here and then give it, and then people say, oh, Bhagawan, 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 like that. So they are the mystics. Okay. In one sense, they suffer the pangs of material miseries because it's like the fan. Now that fan is running. Why is it running? Because the switch is on. So because they are practicing that yogic process. But when they are too attached to the respect that comes out of these mystic powers, they get deviated and stop that yogic process and simply start enjoying the results of the previous yogic powers that they have got. In one sense, now the switch is off, but the fan is still rotating for some time because of inertia. But eventually it will come to a halt because the connection is lost. Now you are not engaged in yoga of any kind. It's like I saved some money in my life and I blew everything up on alcohol. So the savings is gone now. And now I have to start again. I don't have any bank balance. So they are also suffering. The Siddhas also suffering in the material world. They become very proud of their Siddhic powers and end up like the powerless fan. Higher than that are those people who don't fall down at that point in time. They continue in their quest and attain the impersonal feature of the Lord. They are also in between the absolute transcendentalist and the absolute fool, but higher in the spectrum. They attain Brahman, and what is Brahman? It is outside the material world. It's not made of matter. So they go out of the pangs of material miseries in a genuine sense, but temporarily there. They experience existential bliss temporarily. They get bored because there are two types again in that. One is who gets bored there and therefore again falls back into the material world. One is that category which is what the Lord says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma Na Sochani Nakangsi Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labate Param. Out of those people who have attained Brahman, two categories. One who is just in Brahman and gets bored eventually and falls down. Another is one who inquires beyond the Hiranyamayana Patrena, beyond the veil of that Brahman covering, Lord, I want to see you. And then I want to serve you after that in the spiritual world. So these are the people who don't. Some people go there, so no problem. They become devotees, and others, they fall down. When they fall down from Brahman, what are they engaged in again? Prabhupada says they are again engaged in philanthropic activities, just like the moralists are doing. So again, they come down to that platform and continue suffering the pangs of material miseries. But still, they are higher up in the realm of intelligent people. So therefore, this is very nicely summed up in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami in Madhya Leela chapter 19, text 149, the Lord says, Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, Kami, Sakali, Ashanti, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama, Ata Eva Shanta. Therefore Lord says all these Bhuktis, Mukti, Siddhis, everybody is Ashant. At the end of the day, they all are suffering the pangs of material misery. It's only Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta. Now the word Nishkama is very important here. He doesn't say Krishna Bhakta Ata Eva Shanta. He says Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. So now we will come to those people who are devotees but not Nishkama. Any idea who we are talking about? Okay. So devotees also suffer the pangs of material miseries. Why? Because we are not Nishkama Bhaktas. That is the problem. So we are also in this. So why do devotees suffer? That's the final conversation we are going to have. And we'll spend a little bit more time in this because it's our life. Right? This is explained in Nectar of Devotion. Again, coincidentally, we are doing that in our Bhakti Shastri. Why do devotees suffer? Rupa Goswami explains in Nectar of Devotion that there are six characteristics of bhakti. Kleshagni, Shubhada, Moksha Lagutakrata, Sudhurlabha, Sandarananda Visheshatma and
Krishna Akarshaniki. These are six characteristics of bhakti.
Klesha Agni and Shubhada, it is mentioned by Rupa Goswami that they are within the realms of sadhana bhakti. Okay. There are three types of bhakti: sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So the first two characteristics are equal to sadhana bhakti. The second two characteristics are mapped to bhava bhakti, and the third final is prema bhakti. There may be some overlaps, slight overlaps are there, but largely it's like that. So why do devotees suffer? Klesha Agni means relief from material distress. Are devotees not getting relief from material distress? Yes, to a large extent. Are we completely getting relief from material distress? Not at all. Because devotees also lose jobs. Devotees also lose their health. Correct? Devotees also go through, you know, violent separations in or trouble in married life. Everything happens to devotees also. Right? Material phenomena is applicable to devotees also. That is because Klesha Agni and Shubhada, Shubhada means all auspiciousness, will manifest only at the stage of Nishtitha Bhakti. Rupa Goswami explains in Nectar of Devotion. Only when we are on the platform of Nishtha will these two characteristics fully manifest. Otherwise it will not manifest. It will partly manifest to the extent. Ye yathamam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. To the extent we are Nishtitha, to that extent then we are out of the material miseries. And that is the problem. For us, we have multiple desires. We have a desire to hear Srimad Bhagavatam also, and we also have a desire to know whether what will happen in the India and South Africa cricket match today. We have both these problems. Correct? And it impacts us in some way. We feel happy when we say, someone comes and tells, Prabhuji, after Bhagavatam class, Prabhuji, India is winning. You know, 245 for no wicket in 20 overs. Like that. Why are we getting very happy? Because we still are in the bodily concept of life, thinking that I am Indian and somebody there is a South African. Correct? And on the other hand, if somebody is a South African, he is very miserable. Oh! You know, like that. So there, this is anishthita. This is still we are in the platform of anartha nivritti. Anarthas are still there. False identities are still there in our heart. That is why these things impact us more than what is required. Another way of looking at it is, devotees suffer in Klesha Agni and Shubhada stage because our prarabdha karma is still going on. I'm not going to get into the details of that, otherwise that will take another 1 hour, but I will assume that most of you all are familiar with prarabdha, aprarabdha. Prarabdha means that sufferings which have already fructified now, and aprarabdha is those sufferings which are stored in the future. Right? So the way Krishna consciousness works is, it is the aprarabdha which goes away initially when we practice bhakti, but the prarabdha doesn't go away. Why? It is fructified, but still it can, still Lord can do anything. No? He doesn't. Because if prarabdha also goes away, why will we come to the temple? If everything is happy, I have bungalow in Turak, nice job, you know, nice wife, everything nice, nice children are doctors, you know, but still they are respectful. Wife is like, what is that? Sita, you are like Ramchandra, children are like love and kush. You know, in material life it doesn't happen like that. Correct? Boss is like, you know, Yudhishthira. Office mein Mangala Arati ke baad hi, you know, after Mangala Arati work starts. Prashadam is served in the office. Doesn't work like that. Material world. Correct? Whichever restaurant you go, everything is prashadam. It is not like that. Life is not like that. So, prarabdha is still there. Some suffering is required because that is the Lord's plan to detach us from the material world. So there will be suffering. even if we are devotees.
That is another reason why devotees suffer. Because the Lord doesn't want us to become complacent. Still another aspect why devotees suffer is from one of the statements I remember once, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj, when he was lecturing here, he said, we are not Vaishnavas actually. We are Vaishnava Abhas. Vaishnavas don't suffer, but we are not Vaishnavas. We are Vaishnava Abhas. We are a shadow of the real pure devotee. Okay. Why? Because we are not Nishkama. Nishkama means what? Being desireless. Being desireless means having desires only for Krishna's pleasure. Right now, all our desires are not for Krishna's pleasure only. We have to honestly dig inside ourselves and ask, are all our desires only for Krishna's pleasure? Prabhu, I want to accept Grihastha Ashram so that I and my wife can nicely serve in Krishna consciousness. As if we were not attracted to the lady. Hang on. No. We are not at that stage right now. Okay. So, we are not fully, everything we do is for dovetailing in Krishna consciousness. Yes, we may be attracted and incidentally there is an opportunity, thankfully, to dovetail in Krishna consciousness. That is a different issue. Correct. So, we are Vaishnava Abhas. We are not pure Vaishnavas. And another problem which devotees have is inadequate faith, or faith is fairly shaky. This is a symptom of a Kanishta trying to move into a Madhyama platform. Shaky faith. For example, because World Cup cricket is going on, I'll talk about an example from cricket. In cricket, what differentiates a good batsman from a bad batsman, from a poor batsman? What differentiates? No. The ability to make decisions differentiate. The batsman who is able to make a good decision is a good batsman. How to face that particular ball? It is said in cricket that a good bowler is one who bowls consistently in the zone of uncertainty. He pitches the ball in such a way, such that the batsman doesn't know whether to play in the front foot or the back foot. And that's why he's kind of struggling and it takes the edge and goes to the slip. Okay, if you are familiar with cricket then. I'll stop this example very soon. Okay. So, a good bowler is one who bowls in this uncertainty zone. So, whether you don't know what to do, my goodness, should I play like this? Or should I attack? Should I defend? I don't know. Like that. And a good batsman is one who has honed his judgment. He knows exactly what to do. Like that. So, life gives us problems like that. We don't know whether we should solve it using material intelligence or whether we should surrender to Krishna. The bowling is always, the ball is pitched at that uncertain zone. And because we have anishthita, our faith is not strong, we vacillate. We vacillate between faith and no faith. I don't know what I should do in this situation. That's another reason. We are suffering the pangs of mental miseries. Why? Because nishthita bhakti is not there. Because we are not surrendered. We can recite this verse very nicely. Krishna avish, no, Krishna rakshishiti sa vishwaso. Krishna will definitely protect. But 100% sure, let's say tomorrow we are in Lint cafe and that ISIS terrorist is holding that gun on our head. Will we have faith? Krishna definitely will protect me. We still will think that the police will protect me, or maybe the terrorist will have a change of heart. But how many of us can really be surrendered to the Lord? And saying that whatever happens, even if he pulls the trigger, I will still take it as the Lord has protected me from further suffering in this material world. How many of us can take it like that? No. That's because of anishthita bhakti. Because that kind of consciousness has not yet manifested inside our heart. That is called shubhada, where we see everything is all auspicious. So, inadequate faith. And finally, superficial knowledge of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That also creates havoc in our life. In terms of we undergoing material miseries. I'll explain that in a while. In fact, we'll go to it right away. This is unrealistic expectations from bhakti makes us miserable. For example, I heard it one recent class from one of the senior devotees in ISKCON. He said, he made a very nice point. Please hear carefully. I like this point. So I made it yellow, bold, underline. He said, unless we are little detached from this material body, please hear carefully. Unless we are little detached from this material body, we will not understand that Lord Krishna loves our soul. Just think about it. For me, it took a little while to understand what he's saying. Unless we are little detached from this material body, we will not understand that Lord Krishna loves our soul. Because we tend to think that Lord Krishna loves us based on what conditions he gives to this material body of ours. So unless we are little detached from this material body, we will not understand that Lord Krishna loves our soul. And he gave the example of Arjuna. Arjuna is in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna tells Lord Krishna, and Lord is speaking to him, which verses initially? Lord is not saying Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. That he only tells in chapter 18. The Lord is talking about Dehino Asmin Yatha Dehe and all these things, the body and soul, in the initial chapters to Arjuna, who is already an associate of the Lord. So Lord is telling Arjuna why all these things. Because Arjuna says that, Lord, listen, I know that, in one sense, I know fairly well. I mean, it's not that I don't know that I'm, because Arjuna was not a fool. You know, Arjuna knew that we are not this body, etc., etc. He knew that basic philosophy very well. But still Arjuna says, but still I'm sad and pained if you kill my relatives. I know they are not this body. All those things I know. But still I am sad and pained if they die. Because at the end of the day, I will not have their association. No, all this is fine. No, you are not this body and all that. Okay. And what does Lord Krishna do in response to that? Lord Krishna is not denying the feelings of Arjuna. He is not saying, Arjuna, don't think like this. You know, immediately he doesn't jump to that. Sarvadaman paritya mamekam sharanam. No. It takes time. Lord does not deny his feelings. He accepts. Yes, I understand you will have pain. And the Lord empathizes with Arjuna. But at the same time, the Lord does not promise to Arjuna that because you are my devotee, I'll keep them alive. Lord doesn't give any such false promises to him. I'll keep them here. Because you are a devotee, I'll reverse the material nature for you. There will be no birth, disease, old age, death for anybody who is the relative of a devotee. The Lord doesn't give any false assurances to Arjuna like that. So, as devotees, we also need to appreciate. We need to revisit this basic philosophy that material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. We cannot say, no, we are devotees, so why material? Because that is the way material, like Devamrit Maharaj always tells this point. He says that this material world is made, it's a machine designed to fail, and you expect that you will succeed in this material world. You will find, you will think that no, you will be happy. It will work somehow because you are a devotee. You are chanting inattentive 16 rounds. Therefore, you know. And trying to follow the four regulative principles to the best of your ability. You know. So we cannot. We expect Lord Krishna to defy the material world for us. It's not going to happen. Why? Because Lord Krishna created this material world only because of our desires. That is the problem. So first we desire, then he creates the material world, then you expect him to defy the rules of that material world. That's not fair. Somewhere. So this is a problem. Just like an example that just came to mind when I was reading this is, every time I face turbulence in the aircraft, I am miserable, I can tell you. Like that. This time when we were traveling from Jagannath Puri to Bombay, the pilot, he was kind of very decent, in his warning. He said, the weather is slightly bad outside. So for the first 20 minutes, you may experience some discomfort. I can believe me, I didn't know the kind of discomfort that I will have. I thought body and soul will become different on that day itself, separated. Okay, when we took that Bhubaneswar flight, no, because the weather was really bad. He took, and then I was saying, Jai Jagannath, I was shouting, and people from behind are looking at me. I was really gone, and then I was thinking, what is this philosophy? After so many years, you know, I'm not this body, but no, not when I'm in the flight. I really can't believe that. I am the body. Lord, you do whatever. I'm not the body or whatever. I may be chanting in a different realm, but right now I'm praying to you, please land this flight properly in Bombay. But actually, you can't do anything. We can't do anything. When you have decided, it was your choice to sit in that flight. I had a choice also to go by train, happily, nicely in sleeper third class. But I know I wanted to go fast so that I can do something more. It was my decision to take a flight. When you take a flight, and a flight will have turbulence because material nature, bad weather is designed by the Lord. So you chose to ride in that because you chose to cut your time, and then now you can't blame him. That why turbulence is there and why the flight is going up and down. It's almost like that. So we chose to come into this material world, so we have to go through the turbulence. There is no option to get out of the aircraft before time. It will land at the time of death or liberation. So we have to accept these human experiences. When we deny, then we become miserable and we lose faith. We have to take the blame for coming into this material world and not put the blame on him that you designed this material world. For example, that day, you know, there was one video that I was seeing, you know, Emmanuel and myself, where, you know, one fellow, one atheist is being, what is his name? I forgot. Stephen what? Fry. Somebody, he was being interviewed. And the fellow is saying, children are dying of, what cancer was that? Blood cancer. Therefore, I will not accept this concept of God. How can he create this? Maybe the mother was smoking at the time of pregnancy. Otherwise, why will they die? Or, let's put devotee arguments. Prabhuji, why did he die of cancer? He was not even eating onion garlic. No, that is another logic. We have to understand that today, scientifically, even when we eat fruits and vegetables, in fact, it was somewhere I heard that if you eat fruits and vegetables, you have a very high chance of getting cancer. Because everything is with pesticides. Now, the question is, do we have a choice? We have a choice to eat organic, correct or no? But we don't want to eat. Why?
Because
we want to save money for buying a bigger house and buying that expensive carpet in the house. So we save money in buying organic food and we try to put an air conditioner or something, you know, or put the, you know, matte finish paint in our house. Or high-end carpets or high-end flooring. This is our problem. Correct? So there also we have a choice. But still we don't exercise. So Lord is providing so many options. We have an option of living naturally. No, I'll go to CBD and work. Because why? Because if I'm in the farm, people may not respect me socially. In social circles, you know, people will say, oh, a farmer? Oh, okay. Oh, I'm a manager. Oh, is it where? In the bank. Oh, very good. You know. So we want this. So now we can't blame Krishna. Oh, when I go to office on Monday, why that misery? Why that stress? My God, information technology, IT job. Oh my God. You have an option to live simply, but we don't want. Correct? And then we blame Krishna for all the miseries. If because of stress we get diabetes and then because of diabetes we get some, you know, ailment and we are in hospital, then we say, Krishna, I'm chanting 16 rounds. Why? So this is the problem. So, people who are neither transcendentalists, who are neither there, nor who are the drunkards, who are on the other end of spectrum, who are blissfully unaware, you know, they are suffering, you know, in between. I heard one more interesting point in another lecture, where the speaker was mentioning that in the Vedic times, you did not die by eating. We died by becoming old. But we will not die because of eating. It is only in Kali Yuga that this is happening. Because we are eating all this, you know, French fries and what not. So we don't die because of eating. Then, he mentioned that in the olden days, there was Gurukula system. where people were, right from childhood, were taught the Vedic way of life. And Vedic way of life means that the children, even when they are teenagers, will be separated and they will be living with the guru. Since childhood, they will be living with the guru. There is no opposite sex association. Whereas in today's schools, modern day grammar schools, private schools, public schools, where we want to send our children and be proud, these schools are not gurukulas. They do exactly the opposite. I know, for example, the school where my son goes to, they will, they have two wings. The boys' school is called as Melbourne High School and the girls' school is called as Mac Robertson. You know, both are top-end public schools. But they have this program where both these people have to dance together. Hey, what is that called as? What night is that? Social night. Now, is this really required? But it is compulsory. And this is not only in his school. In many schools we have this. So, don't think we can escape. No. In grammar school, it is probably more refined again. No, it's higher. Oh no, let there be, let the boys and girls meet and let them understand how to interact and things like that. And we send our children to these slaughterhouses and then we cannot expect that their senses will not be agitated after that. So therefore, there is no point in blaming the Lord. We have to just at least look at the Lord and say, Lord, look, you are very kind, but I'm a fool. If at all I have any merit that somehow I have got a spiritual master by your mercy and I am having these instructions. And I am trying to struggle to follow these things. So, devotees also suffer. And then finally, one last point. This is the thing which sometimes is inconceivable also. Why sometimes even devotees who are very fixed suffer? That's the last point. And it is mentioned, and it's mentioned in several places in Srimad Bhagavatam, that this is all because of the influence of time. I'll give you an example. A few years back, fairly recently, not many years back, there were a set of devotees who suddenly decided to go to the Himalayas, to a place called Muktinath. You must have heard this, many of you. Now this place, the spiritual master had earlier already told that you don't have to visit these kind of places, they are risky to go to. Okay. We have Vrindavan, we have Mayapur, that's good enough. Prabhupada also said, Prabhupada never said go to Muktinath. Right? We have Vrindavan, we have Mayapur, we have Jagannath Puri Dham, good enough. And we have our home where we can practice, we have a local temple where we can worship. So why take risks? Because in these places, the airports are not so, it's high terrain everywhere. And then the airports are also, they don't have long runways. It's very risky. You're just landing on a narrow strip amidst the valleys of the mountains. Can you imagine? One wrong move and you're hitting the hill. But somehow or the other, the devotees, especially two devotees, who were really, really considered as top class devotees. They were excellent in deity worship. Whether at the temple or whether in their home. At home also, the standards they followed was super high. Standards of deity worship. Very fixed. Even in their home they used to follow that. Two brothers. Both of them decided to go on this trip. Not only that, they took another home. They convinced somehow another 7-8 devotees to board that flight. And then the flight crashed and all the devotees died. Okay. So there was a big hue and cry. Even I also said, why Lord, why? How can it happen to devotees? All of them dying in air crash. Whereas some of the dons of the underworld, they are still alive, enjoying material lives. Immediately the mind goes to both these spectrums and then your faith kind of shakes like that. So, I heard a very good class also in refutation on how not to think like that. And so many points that we have already discussed came across. And then the final point which he mentioned struck me, that sometimes you cannot explain it because it is the influence of time and the Lord's desire. That can happen. And he gave a very nice example. He gave a very nice example. He said that it is like the bride on her wedding day
who is marrying her lover. Usually what happens, if you see it in Indian weddings, which is what mostly I have seen in Indian weddings, so I will talk from that context. I have seen that in weddings, there are two families. The girl's family is crying, like that. And the boy's family is all dancing, you know, enjoying. Okay. No, not only because of the dowry thing, but, you know. But the boy's family is enjoying that, you know, oh, we are an addition to the family. But then the girl's family is weeping because the father is saying, how can I live without my daughter now? Mother is saying, how can I live without my daughter? I mean, my daughter is going away. The house will be so empty, you know, like that. Now, usually the daughter is also crying when it is an arranged marriage. But when it is a love marriage, the daughter usually doesn't cry. Why? Because the daughter says that, mother, mom, I know where I am going to. I'll be very happy. Trust me. I know I'll be loved there. You know, like that. So, the departure of devotees in this context, if you put this example, is like that. So, we have to understand that yes, they are going to a place. It's we who are miserable in one sense, thinking that, oh, what happened? What kind of tragedy? But maybe the Lord wanted those services. You know, he may decide, okay, if he wants, he can take away anyone. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was taken away just like that. No one imagined that he wouldn't even reach the airport, right? He was in the midst of some of the biggest ISKCON projects. He was right at the helm of affairs. Who imagined? But the Lord had other plans. So it is, some things are inexplainable. You know, it is just the influence of time and the will of the Lord. So today, we saw so many aspects of, you know, from the lower end of the spectrum, people who are completely oblivious because they are sozzled and they don't experience material, they don't experience material suffering, to the higher end of transcendentalists who see everything as Krishna, even death as Krishna, they are on that end, and then people like us who are in between, who experience material suffering. We also saw that the people who are in between, they are also at various levels, who see suffering in their own ways. I'll stop here. It's 9 o'clock. Are there any questions or comments? Asking the wrong person. He's asking how to develop that little detachment. So, I'm not qualified to answer that, frankly, because I'm not a person who is highly detached. No, quite the opposite. But I'll quote what the acharyas are saying in this matter. It is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ahetukam, which means by performing devotional service sincerely, knowledge and detachment will come quickly without any external reason, and automatically also it will come. Asu Vairagyam. Asu means quickly. Jnanam and Vairagyam. Vairagyam means detachment. That will come automatically. So, if we follow the basic principles of Krishna consciousness properly, which starts with attentively chanting 16 rounds, then we will find that soon we will come to the platform of Nishtha. When we come to the platform of Nishtha, then we can experience Anartha Nivriti at its fullest, as well as Shubhada at its fullest. And then, you know, we will not have that. And then starts Moksha Lagutakrita. What is Moksha Lagutakrita? Moksha Lagutakrita means a devotee derides the conception of liberation. And we were explaining in the Bhakti Shastri class yesterday that why do we want liberation? The only reason why a devotee, why somebody wants liberation is fear of the material world. Fear of suffering in the material world. Right? But when you go into that Nishtha platform, when you start experiencing that auspiciousness fully, then there is no fear of the material world. Then you can even deride the concept of liberation. But because we are attached, because we have false attachments, you know, we are attached to our family, we are attached to our wealth on a material level, not on a spiritual level. Therefore, we have these fears. We are always fearful because we are attached. And the only way of overcoming that fear is by following the basics of Krishna consciousness, which is to chant attentively and follow four regulative principles. Also, yes, also there is a power of prayer. But we should not be afraid of praying. We can pray to the Lord, especially to Lord Nityananda, who is very merciful. If we really believe that we are attached to something and we really want to be detached from that,
then we can pray to the Lord, Lord, please detach me from these things, without being too heavy on me. Don't do it too fast also. Like that. Because our mind will tell us that also. If you pray like that, Lord, please detach me from the lure of the lucre, which means the lure of money. Okay, I'll take away all your money, no problem. No, don't be so harsh on me also. Our mind also will tell us, don't pray like that. So there is a check which our mind always gives us. Maybe the Lord will take it too seriously, our prayers. But the Lord actually knows how sincere we are. So He will not do that. He will only reciprocate if we ask sincerely. So therefore, after a little bit of thinking, at least for myself, when I'm praying to the Lord, I'm saying, Lord, please help me so that I pray rightfully to you. What's the level below that? Because I can't even pray sincerely, we can't do the prayers of pure love. Oh, I have no desire for women, nor do I desire any followers, nor do I desire any money. I only want your God. Okay, I'll take away all your money. I'll take away any woman in your life. Fine, you want my causeless devotional service birth after birth? Shall I give you now? I was just telling Sikshtashtakam, We are like that. We are not at that level. To really, so the only prayer we can do is two levels below that. Lord, at least please give me some sense so I can pray, I can approach you with sincere feeling. That is what Kunti Maharani said. Approaching you with a sincere feeling. That's two levels below that. In one sense. Yes. Also don't know, but anything is possible. No, seriously, I don't know the answer to this. It's a very technical question. If anyone else knows, please. Anyone knows why Bhima was bitten by a snake and why he was thrown in a pit on top of that? Yes. You were born with the consciousness of worshipping demigods. Prabhupada says, in fact, in second canto, I believe, I'm not sure, maybe it's in second canto, Bhaktisar Prabhu, maybe you can correct. Somewhere it is mentioned that in Kali Yuga, fools will worship fools, other fools. Which is that verse? I forgot. Mudas will worship other people. Men like the consciousness of dogs and hogs will worship other people who also have that consciousness. So worshipping great personalities, materially great personalities, is not a sign of piety necessarily. Okay, it's not that if I have a poster of that football player Ronaldo, then I am a very pious person. No, it's not like that. No, worshipping great personalities is not akin to the consciousness of worshipping demigods. They are not at the same platform. Because see, ultimately, people who are worshipping the demigods are still doing something which is scriptural. And people who are worshipping the great personalities are not doing something which is scriptural. Nowhere in the scriptures it is mentioned that one should worship materially successful people. But yes, in the scriptures, the Lord says that if you know, you can approach the demigods. Okay, but of course, he says, fools approach the demigods, but he says you must respect the demigods in that sense. Because demigods provide us, at the end of the day, demigods are agents of the Lord to provide us with rain, water, etc. The footy players don't provide us with that, with the basic necessities of life. Okay. So it's not on the same platform. The demigods are actually bhaktas of the Lord. They may be sakama bhaktas, but they are devotees of the Lord. Whereas, not necessarily, I'm not saying soccer players are not. If a soccer player can even become a paramahamsa, you know, in that sense, nobody is debarred from devotional service because of his profession, right? But usually we will find that people who are these kind of personalities, they are usually not very interested in spiritual life. They don't turn to God. Usually we find that. So they are not on the same platform, in short. Am I making sense? That is true. Okay, that is true because Krishna says, I am the ability in man.
Yeah.
So yes, we can see Krishna through them, but it doesn't mean we are going to worship them or be in adulation of them. Does it make sense? That way we can see Krishna even in a rat. Okay, we don't have to necessarily go to, you know, successful personalities. We can see Krishna even in unsuccessful personalities. If we want to see Krishna everywhere, then you don't have to see them in the great material personalities. We can see even in an insignificant ant, we can see Krishna. So that is an instruction which is given to devotees, so that we are able to see Krishna's energy everywhere. And Prabhupada also says, by seeing Krishna in the abilities of great personalities, we will not develop envy for them. And in that context, that instruction is given. So everything is very contextual. It's not okay. It's required to respect everyone.
Sorry?
It's required. We must respect everyone.
Yeah.
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 If respect goes into adulation, yes, then there is a possibility that we may start emulating them. That's the risk.
And
because there are other things which they are doing which is not good, which we also will try to, you know, emulate. So that is the risk of following these kind of personalities.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's quite easy.
Yeah.
It is
yeah. Because they are just having some material, they are materially very opulent, which is good. But then again, when we come to higher understanding in bhakti, then we realize that these things are insignificant. And neither are they the goal of life. So we are dealing with the highest philosophy, you know, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So I'll stop here because it's already 9:13. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
I've read so many times in Prabhupada's books, it's also.
Okay.